Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents If Love Had a Price by Anna Huang. Narrated by Cindy Kay and Aiden Snow. Chapter 1. I'll pay you $10,000 to fuck my stepmother. Chris's mouth curled into a smirk when the green-eyed Adonis stopped walking and turned. His handsome face a curious mask of boredom and disbelief. He'd ignored her for the better part of the summer, which she didn't appreciate. No one ignored Chris Carrera. But he was perfect for her plan. So she was willing to play nice. And by nice, she meant not ripping his balls off and tossing them to the cougars that stalked Rodeo Drive in a pack of bad Botox and tacky Versace. Oh, and her $10,000 offer was pretty sweet, too. But for the daughter of one of the richest men in America, 10 grand was a drop in the bucket. You're mistaking me for someone else. Adonis's whiskey drawl slipped over her skin, as smooth and dark as onyx, polished at first glance, but rough beneath the surface. I'm not a prostitute. Chris's smirk sharpened. She closed the distance between them until she could count every sun-kissed strand of his wavy brown hair and see the veiled fury glittering in his green eyes. The fury was interesting. She supposed most people wouldn't enjoy being pegged as a prostitute, but the tense set of his jaw told her there was a deeper reason behind his anger. If Chris cared, she'd ruminate on the reason. She didn't. All Chris cared about was throwing her gold-digging, fake-titted stepmother-to-be onto the streets. And Adonis here was going to help make that happen. He was exactly Gloria's, aka the step-monster's type. Tan, ripped, and so gorgeous he looked photoshopped. Bonus points for the ability to string two words together in a coherent sentence without using the term dude. He was every straight female's type, really. And he was the perfect candidate for the job. All she had to do was convince him. I should have been more clear, Chris purred. I'll pay you $10,000 to pretend to fuck my stepmother. Whether you actually stick your dick inside her is none of my concern. Adonis barked out a laugh, a low husky sound that caused her stomach to flip in the strangest way. It better not be that sandwich I ate earlier, she thought. If Chris got food poisoning, she'd sue the cafe they'd just left at Kingdom Come, which would be a damn shame because she liked the place. Located between her family's Beverly Hills mansion and her summer job as an assistant to top Hollywood publicist Bobby Radin, Alchemy Cafe was an airy haven of perfectly crafted lattes and eye candy, including the chiseled hunk standing before her. She didn't know his actual name, so she'd secretly dubbed him Adonis after the beautiful Greek god. He was a waiter at Alchemy, though she'd bet her last dollar he was also an aspiring actor or rock star. This was L.A., after all.
Lady, you must be on drugs. I'm not going near your stepmother, even if you have one.
Adonis narrowed his eyes.
If this is for a prank show, you're wasting my time. I don't do reality TV, especially ones I didn't consent to.
Chris bristled, both at his mocking use of the word lady and the fact that he was wasting her time by being so stubborn. His immunity to her charms also irritated her. Chris rarely engaged in flirting or romantic affairs, but she expected a certain level of drool when she turned on the heat. Big brown eyes, full lips, and a petite, curvy figure, including a natural set of 36 C's, usually caught a guy's attention. But no, Adonis here looked about as interested as a cardboard eunuch. Wisps of irritation curled through her. This is not for a prank show, as if Chris would touch something as tacky as reality TV. My time is precious, and I won't spend it arguing with you. So here's the deal in a nutshell. My father is getting married to his gold-digging fiancée this fall and refuses to listen to reason. So I'm going to force him to see reason, aka toss her out with nothing but the cheap clothes she wore when she seduced him at that bar she was working at.
And you're going to do that by hiring someone to fuck... Sorry, pretend to fuck.
The sarcasm was evident. Your future stepmother. And take photos of her doing it. Chris shrugged. She'd cheat on my dad in a heartbeat after she becomes Mrs. Carrera. I'm saving him from future heartbreak. Chris cared about her dad, even if he was so busy she only saw him a few weeks a year. She knew he could do better than that red-headed pile of trash Gloria. Not to mention, Chris still hadn't forgiven the step monster for convincing her father to cut her off over Christmas break. Luckily, Roger Carrera soon caved to his only daughter's silent treatment and reinstated Chris's credit card privileges, albeit with a monthly limit. But Chris never forgot a slight. She would make Gloria pay.
How are you so sure she'll cheat?
The fury had bled out of Adonis's eyes, replaced by derisive amusement. Chris ticked the reasons off on her fingers. One, she's half his age and looks like Jessica Rabbit, while my dad, bless his heart, is no George Clooney. Two, she has zero morals. Three, judging by the way she eye-fucks other guys when she thinks no one is looking, she's a thing for young, muscly, pretty boy types. She ran her eyes over Adonis's sculpted lips, sharp jawline, and broad shoulders. Someone like you. Although she wasn't sure Adonis qualified as a pretty boy. He was beautiful, but he exuded a raw, intense masculinity that eluded most of the plastic, perfect Ken dolls living in L.A. Chris grimaced the second the thought crossed her mind. She'd clearly been in the so-called City of Angels for too long, because her inner dialogue was starting to resemble that of a bad rom-com character.
I'm flattered, the sarcasm returned.
A breeze swept by, ruffling Adonis's floppy hair.
But it's still a no.
Chris sputtered in disbelief. Are you kidding? It's $10,000. You don't even have to kiss her. Just make it look like you're fucking her. You're an actor, aren't you?
Adonis's brows snapped together. How did you know that?
Please, this is L.A. If you're a good-looking waiter, there's an 85% chance you're an aspiring actor.
Fair enough. He rubbed his jaw. Why me? There are plenty of actors in L.A. who'd jump at the opportunity.
I told you, you're the stepmonster's type. Although Chris would never admit it, Adonis also intrigued her. She'd been a regular customer at Alchemy since she landed in L.A. 3 weeks ago, and he was the only male staff member who'd never spared her a glance except to ask if she'd like a refill. That, plus the fact he'd just turned down $10,000, money he needed if the beat-up old car he'd been about to get into before she stopped him was anything to go by, made him a smidge more interesting than his Y-chromosome compatriots. Chris averted her eyes from the beat-up car in question. Just looking at its scratched paint and dented driver's door made her skin itch with discomfort. The sad old thing was like the visual equivalent of polyester.
And I told you, I'm no whore,
Adonis said softly. The air between them crackled with tension, and the hairs on the back of Chris's neck prickled with unease. Her senses had never been more alert, picking up everything from the way Adonis's muscled chest rose and fell to the faint, not at all unpleasant scent of coffee and leather that wafted from his clothing. We're going around in circles, Chris struggled to maintain her cool demeanor. Like I said, you don't actually have to sleep with her. This is an acting job. You'll be acting as her lover. Seduce her and get her into a compromising position where my PI can snap a few quick pics and you'll be $10,000 richer. It's the easiest job you could ask for. Adonis leaned against his car and crossed his arms over his chest. With his hard glare and insouciant slouch, he resembled a modern-day James Dean, with a dash of Liam Hemsworth thrown in.
Make it $15,000 and I'll think about it.
Disbelief. disbelief swirled in Chris's veins. You're fucking kidding. You're negotiating with me? Who the hell did he think he was? 10 grand was already a lot for a minimum amount of work. I could hire any wannabe actor in this town for that price.
Then hire them.
A mocking smile flirted at the edges of Adonis's mouth at her subsequent silence.
If it was that easy, you wouldn't be arguing with a waiter in a parking lot.
Somehow, he made the word waiter sound like an insult toward Chris, even though he was the server.
What'll it be, princess? She ground her teeth.
15K and you'll do it?
I'll think about doing it.
Chris was this close to punching him in his perfect face. She should have worn her Dior cocktail ring today. Then her punch would have really hurt. Fine. Her agreement surprised herself. Give me your phone. Adonis did so without another word. Another surprise. Chris had expected him to deny her request, given how hellbent he seemed on making things difficult for her. She added her number to his contacts and texted herself from his phone. What's your name?
Nate.
Nate. It suited him somehow. I'm Chris, with a K. She returned his phone, her tone crisp and efficient. You have 48 hours to decide. If I don't hear from you by Monday at 5 p.m., the offer goes to someone else. Someone who wouldn't be foolish enough to let the deal of a lifetime slip through their fingers.
Princess, you'd have to offer me a lot more than 15K for this to be the best deal of my life.
Nate's gaze dipped to her lips. The tiny movement charging his words with a sexual innuendo that sent an unexpected blast of heat through Chris's body. His mocking smile reappeared.
Talk to you in 48 hours. Or not.
He climbed into his car and drove away, leaving a fuming, strangely turned on Chris in the parking lot.
Chapter 2. Nate Reynolds' good mood evaporated the second he stepped inside his house. The booze-drenched air clogged his nostrils, and the familiar sight of his father, passed out on the living room couch with a half-empty bottle of Jack Daniels clutched in his hand, chased away any lingering amusement Nate felt after his conversation with the beautiful brunette from the parking lot earlier. Chris. She'd been a favorite of Alchemy's male staff since she first showed up at the cafe a few weeks ago. She was a regular now, but her perfect hair and designer clothes screamed spoiled princess, which was why Nate had steered clear of anything resembling flirting. His co-workers could drool over her sultry looks and aloof haughtiness all they wanted, but uppity rich girls weren't his type. However, she'd turned out to be more intriguing than he'd expected, fiery and sharp-tongued, instead of dull and vapid like the few heiresses he'd hooked up with in the past. Chris's extravagant 5-figure offer didn't hurt either. Nate may not like spoiled rich girls, but he had no problem taking their money, and God knew his family needed the green. However, the idea of selling his body for cash, even if he was only pretending to do so, caused his stomach to churn with nausea. Nate had 48 hours to decide whether his values were worth the roof over his head. I'll deal with it later. He had more pressing issues at hand, namely getting his father up to his room and airing out the sickly smell of whiskey before Skylar returned home. Michael Reynolds grunted and shifted in his sleep. He'd been a handsome man once, with the same sharp bone structure and olive complexion as his son, but age, grief, and alcohol had transformed him into a shell of the person he used to be. A familiar cocktail of resentment, resignation, and weariness bubbled in Nate's veins as he opened all the windows and spritzed the air with a lemony-smelling spray Skylar had bought on their last Walmart run. He tidied up the things Michael had knocked over, the umbrella stand in the tiny entry hall, the framed picture of a 10-year-old Nate and 4-year-old Skylar on the side table, before attempting to pry good old Jack from his father's hands. Michael stirred. Nothing kicked his ass into gear like the threat of being separated from his precious alcohol. right? His bleary, bloodshot eyes blinked up at his son. What are you doing here?
I live here, Nate said, voice clipped. Is this what you've been doing all day?
Michael was supposed to be job hunting. He'd gotten laid off from his construction gig for showing up to work late and drunk, and he'd said he would find another job soon. That had been 2 months ago.
I sent out a few resumes, Michael mumbled. Don't know what happened after that. Must have fallen asleep.
Nate exhaled a controlled breath. His patience with his father had run out a long time ago. He understood Michael's heartbreak. He and Skylar battled the same grief. No matter how many years passed, the sadness lingered in their household like a dark fog that wouldn't go away. But life didn't stop moving because you were sad, and Michael had 2 children to take care of. Since he'd traded in his responsibilities for the oblivion only found in a bottle, Nate had taken over as de facto head of the household. He was 23, but he acted more like a father to Michael than Michael did to him.
Shower and get dressed. Skylar will be home soon, Nate ordered. He knew when to pick his battles. There was no use pushing Michael on the job hunt when he was like this. He'd just stare at Nate with that empty look in his eyes, like he'd lost the will to live. He basically had 5 years ago when Joanna Reynolds got on a plane home from visiting her best friend in Chicago. She'd never arrived. Her plane had suffered a mechanical failure and crashed in the Rockies, leaving behind no survivors and dozens of devastated families, including Nate's own. Michael struggled to sit up.
Did you get any new roles this week? He asked.
It was both his and Nate's dream for Nate to become a successful actor, only they had wildly different motivations. Nate had dreamed of taking over the big screen since he was a child. Michael just wanted Nate to earn enough money to keep him flush with alcohol. Yeah. No. Once Nate had the cash, he would ship his father off to the best rehab he could find. Maybe then he could glue the pieces of his family back together.
I had a modeling gig, Nate said, sidestepping the question as he looped an arm under Michael's and pulled the older man to his feet.
Nate took the occasional odd job to supplement his salary from the cafe, modeling, catering, bartending. It didn't matter as long as they paid him. Every dollar counted. The Reynoldses weren't destitute. There were families in far worse straits than theirs. But between Michael's unemployment and alcohol addiction, Skylar's expenses as an incoming high school senior, and Nate's acting aspirations, they were stretched paper thin. Thin enough that rent day sent spirals of anxiety tunneling through Nate's body every month. If Nate were selfless, he'd cut back ruthlessly on their spending and give up his dreams of Hollywood stardom. The pursuit of an on-screen career wasn't cheap. Headshots, acting classes, an inordinate amount of gas spent driving all over L.A. for auditions and networking events. It added up. He'd dropped the acting classes when Michael lost his job, but it wasn't enough. However, Nate wasn't a financial genius or a saint. He was a 23-year-old with a dream. Call him selfish, but he'd be damned if he was going to let his hopes slip through his fingers as easily as his youth. He'd shouldered the responsibilities of an adult twice his age since he was 18. Now all he needed was a big break in his career. Just one. That's all I need. A car door slammed outside. Nate stiffened and quickened his pace until he reached his father's room and laid Michael awkwardly on the bed. By the time he yanked the elder Reynolds' shoes off, tucked him beneath the comforter, and drew the curtains closed, Michael had passed out again.
Dad? You home?
Skylar's voice floated up the stairs. Nate shut the door to his father's room behind him and met his sister in the living room. She wore a blue and white jersey and matching shorts with a soccer ball tucked beneath her arm. Her grinning face was flushed and her hair was slicked back into a ponytail. She'd inherited her mom's hazel eyes and golden locks, and sometimes Nate's heart splintered at the resemblance. Skylar's face lit up when she saw him.
Nate, you're home early.
She tackled him with a sweaty hug and laughed when he faux grimaced.
She was a big hugger, no matter the time or situation. Get away from me. You stink. His teasing lilt tempered his words.
Duh, I just came from soccer.
Skylar rolled her eyes, then wrinkled her nose.
Actually, this entire room stinks. Ew.
Blame your B.O.
Shut up, I do not have B.O.
She gnawed on her lip.
Dad's been drinking again, hasn't he?
No, he hasn't, he lied.
Bullshit, it reeks of whiskey.
Skylar's eyes landed on something behind Nate. He followed her gaze and cursed silently when he saw the bottle of Jack Daniels on the coffee table. He'd forgotten to stash it away before dragging their father upstairs. Skylar knew about their father's drinking, but Nate tried to shield her from the worst of it as much as he could. She still held on to the romantic notion that Michael would snap out of his stupor and transform into a doting father again, even though it had been 5 years, and Nate didn't have the heart to shatter her fantasy. Language, he warned, zeroing in on her use of bullshit instead of the half-empty whiskey 5 feet away. Skylar rolled her eyes again.
Whatever. I've heard you say worse things.
How was camp? Nate switched topics. He and Skylar could bicker for hours, but he was exhausted after a busy day at the cafe. He also needed time to mull over Chris's offer.
It was great.
Skylar's ponytail swished with excitement. Nothing animated her more than soccer, except maybe a new issue of Scientific American. Nate didn't know where she got her love of science from. Their mother had been an English teacher, and their father wasn't exactly Bill Nye either.
I scored 2 goals, and Coach said if I keep up my performance, she'll write me a recommendation for Stanford at the end of the summer.
That's awesome. A genuine grin stretched across Nate's face. He'd dropped out of college to work after their mom died and their dad spiraled. While his school grades had been average at best, he missed the college experiences of crazy roommates and new friendships, of parties and girls and all-night adventures, of being young and wild and free. He hadn't had the pleasure of living life the way an 18-year-old should have lived it, but he'd do everything in his power to ensure the same opportunity didn't slip by Skylar. She was smart and spirited, a straight-A student with dreams of studying biology at Stanford. It was an expensive dream, even more so than Nate's, and getting a full-ride scholarship was their only hope of affording it, if she got in. To get a scholarship, Skylar needed an edge over the other applicants. Luckily, she was as talented at soccer as she was at academics, which was why Nate hadn't given a second thought to forking over an ungodly sum of money for a prestigious summer soccer camp that boasted Olympians and World Cup athletes as alumni. He'd worked his ass off for weeks to make up for the drain in their bank account, but it was worth it. Hopefully.
By the way,
Skylar tugged on her ponytail, her tone so casual it immediately raised Nate's suspicions.
Can you drive me to the movies tomorrow night? I'm going with a new friend from camp.
His shoulders relaxed at the mundane request. Thank God she wasn't going on a date or anything like that. Nate had enough to worry about without having to beat hormone-driven teenage boys away from his sister. Sure.
Thanks.
Skylar gave him another hug before bounding up the stairs.
I'm going to take a shower while you order pizza.
Who says I'm ordering pizza? Nate yelled after her. She answered with a knowing laugh. Takeout was a luxury these days, but Saturday night pizza had been a family tradition since they were children. Sometimes they missed it if there was an event or something else going on, but they stuck to it as much as possible. It was the one non-essential item Nate made sure he budgeted for every month. Silence descended in Skylar's wake. Nate leaned against the wall and took out his phone, scrolling aimlessly until he stopped on Chris's name. Memories of her huge dark eyes and lush curves sent twin thrills of arousal and challenge through his veins. She was bad news. The princess types always were. But $15,000, that was enough money to pay several months' rent. Nate would have peace of mind and time to focus on auditions. Who knows, maybe one of the auditions would lead to his big break. Plus, he wouldn't mind seeing Chris again, for payment purposes, of course.
Nate's jaw clenched as the logical side of his brain battled with his resistance to selling his body for money. There was also the moral dilemma of seducing someone to break up a relationship. Perhaps he was being hypocritical because modeling and acting were, in their own ways, selling bodies, and Nate was no saint. But he had his values, and the idea of faking interest in a woman for cold, hard cash sat like greasy pizza in the pit of his stomach. After another 10 minutes of waffling back and forth, he shoved his phone back into his pocket and walked upstairs, where he scrubbed away the day's headaches with a long, hot shower. He didn't need to decide now. Chris had given him 48 hours. He had 45 left.
Chapter 3. Chris's irritation and inexplicable arousal from her encounter with Nate lingered throughout her retail therapy session on Rodeo Drive. By the time she arrived home, the sun had dipped beneath the horizon, but she still trembled with uncharacteristic agitation. 48 hours. She'd never waited that long for anything in her life. And the fact she'd offered Nate that much leeway when she could get any empty-headed pretty boy to take his place baffled her. It was a job. She was an employer hiring an employee, a temporary one at that. Why did Chris care who it was as long as they got the job done? Her foul mood ratcheted up another notch when she saw the step monster's red Ferrari Spider parked in the 10-car garage. The Ferrari, along with Chris's silver Mercedes convertible, was one of 3 cars Roger kept in L.A. for when he was in town. The Carreras mansion in Beverly Hills was, like all their other properties, huge. And Chris had avoided the step monster 9 times out of 10 so far. Even so, knowing the redhead roamed the estate at the same time as her put Chris's teeth on edge. She slammed her car door shut and entered the main building, bypassing the dome-ceilinged foyer, massive sunken living room, and gourmet kitchen on her way to her suite. Shopping bags from dozens of designer boutiques hung from her arms. But Chris was too consumed with thoughts of emerald eyes and whiskey drawls to take comfort in the weight of thousands of dollars worth of clothing and accessories. She tried to shake the image of Nate out of her mind, but it clung to her consciousness like saran wrap. Damn it. Chris made it to the bottom of the staircase, right as Gloria's sickeningly sweet voice seeped into the air.
How is work, darling?
The exaggerated southern accent caused the hairs on the back of Chris's neck to prickle. She straightened her shoulders, turned, and leveled the step monster with a disinterested gaze. Gloria wasn't her stepmother yet, thank God. But step monster to be didn't roll off the tongue quite as smoothly. Her father's 27-year-old fiancé wore a green floral bikini top that showcased the best double D's money could buy and a sheer sarong that stopped mid-thigh. With her flame-colored hair, hourglass figure, and fluttering lashes, she resembled Jessica Rabbit. Only she was even faker than the cartoon.
I feel so bad for you having to work all day.
Gloria's glossy lips pushed out into a pout.
Must be so tedious.
But you know what your father said. You need to learn the value of money and hard work, darling. Can't go frittering away the family fortune on designer handbags and shoes. She raised an eyebrow at Chris's proliferation of shopping bags. Fury simmered in Chris's veins. Gloria was one to talk, given her addiction to Hermes and Louis Vuitton. She'd been a cocktail waitress scraping by on tips from lecherous men at a high-end bar before she'd landed her big fish, Roger Carrera, a.k.a. Chris's dad. In the 18 months since she and Roger met, she'd transformed from an unsophisticated nobody who considered Target high-end to a designer snob who racked up monthly bills equivalent to the average American's annual salary. Still, Chris maintained her composure. She and Gloria were locked in a cold war, not a hot one. They fought their battles in the shadows, through subtle poisonous barbs and behind-the-scenes machinations. Whoever lost their cool first put themselves at a serious disadvantage. Thank you for your concern. I'm sure you've had enough experience with hard work for the both of us. But there's no need to worry about me frittering away the family fortune. I plan to protect the Carreras' money from anyone and anything that might threaten it. The real meaning behind her words hung in the air, clear as day. Gloria was the threat, and Chris would annihilate her before the stepmonster ever stepped foot on the wedding aisle. Part of it was pure vindictiveness on Chris's part. Her father had insisted she get a real job this summer and learn the value of money because Gloria had planted the idea in his head. Roger had been happy to provide Chris with as much money and freedom as she wanted, until the stepmonster entered the picture. Instead of arguing, Chris had agreed and convinced her father to land her a job as a summer assistant for Bobby Raiden. She knew when to pick her battles, and if she was going to work like a plebeian, she might as well work at a glamorous job in L.A., where she could take advantage of the beaches and boutiques in her spare time, instead of pushing papers at her father's company's Seattle headquarters. To her surprise and dismay, Gloria had offered to join her in California, framing it as an opportunity to bond with her future stepdaughter before the November nuptials. Roger, who was blind to Gloria and Chris's mutual loathing and eager for them to get along, had jumped at the idea. Never mind the fact that Chris and Gloria wanted to bond as much as Chris had wanted to drown in a sea of itchy polyester sweaters. No, the stepmonster had merely seized the opportunity to spend a summer in sunny SoCal instead of gloomy Seattle, while Roger closed a major business deal in Manila. The deal had sucked up all of his attention the past few months, and he decided to stay in the Philippines until it was done, instead of flying back and forth between Washington and Asia every few weeks. "Oh, sweet darling, how naive you are," Gloria said softly. "To think you could protect anything from anyone. You grew up with a silver spoon in your mouth. You have no idea what it's like having to fight for survival." Chris bared her teeth in a semblance of a smile. "Care to wager on that?" "Oh, I don't do wagers. Silly little things." Gloria waved a dismissive hand in the air. Her massive 10-carat Cartier engagement ring flashed in the light, and a cold gleam of satisfaction entered her eyes when she saw Chris's eyes twitch with anger at the sight. "Besides," she drawled, "you won't have enough to wager with." The stepmonster spun on her heels and strutted toward the pool, her hips swaying like a pendulum. "You won't have enough to wager with." What the hell was that supposed to mean? Gloria had convinced her father to cut her off after Chris spent an extravagant sum of money on her friend Courtney Taylor's birthday weekend during study abroad. But a guilt-ridden Roger had reinstated Chris's credit card privileges soon after. She doubted Gloria would try that trick again. Besides, Chris's checking and savings accounts were flush with cash, and once she turned 23, she'd come into a trust fund large enough to ensure she'd never have to work a day in her life. She decided Gloria was merely fucking with her and ascended the rest of the stairs to her room. Once Nate accepted Chris's offer, and he would accept, Gloria would be out of her life forever. Chris had faith in his ability to seduce the stepmonster. Despite her giggly facade and damsel-in-distress routine, Gloria was no dummy. But she also hadn't seen her fiancé in over a month, and Nate was beautiful enough to bring even a nun to her knees. A lusty, bored housewife in training would be a piece of cake. Chris kicked off her Jimmy Choos and flexed her feet against the plush carpet. Her stomach tangled again when she pictured Nate's broad, strong shoulders and exquisitely sculpted face. She wondered what poor bastards were wandering around with warts and sagging jowls so Nate could enjoy his surplus of beauty. God had to have poured at least 3 males worth of handsomeness into him. His gorgeousness made little sense otherwise. Chris attempted to push him out of her mind by unpacking her purchases, but she was so distracted, she couldn't even appreciate her new rag-and-bone booties. Her eyes strayed to the clock on her nightstand. "Tick-tock, Nate," she whispered. "I don't like to be kept waiting." Chris spent the next morning at Alchemy, knee-deep in research. She was sure Nate would accept her offer, but just in case he didn't, she needed a backup. By the time noon rolled around, she'd scrolled through so many actor headshots her eyes swam. Six-pack abs, strong jawlines, perfect tans, blah, blah, boring. Nate had all those things too, but he imbued them with a confidence and swagger that captivated at first sight. The guys Chris found online were the opposite of captivating. To be fair, they were pictures. Maybe they were more charming in person. But Chris needed a break before she banged her head against the table out of frustration. "Vanilla latte, double shot of espresso." The blue-haired barista waiter with a wicked-looking nose ring slid the drink in front of her. "Thanks." Chris flicked her eyes at the rest of the staff. No Nate. He usually worked the morning shift on Sundays. Not that she was keeping track or anything. He caught her eye the second she saw him. But she'd never thought about engaging with him until she came up with her brilliant plan to get rid of Gloria a week ago. A strange wisp of disappointment curled through Chris at his absence. "Looks like a full house today," she said casually. "I'm surprised there are only 3 people on staff." The cafe was a tranquil coffee shop during the week, but on the weekends, it buzzed with trendy brunchgoers. Chris had arrived early enough to claim a corner table, and she justified hogging her spot for hours with a steady diet of coffee, pastries, and an order of delicious French toast. "It's okay, no more or less busy than other weekends." Blue Hair looked startled by Chris's sudden chattiness. She'd never initiated a conversation before beyond the usual, "Hi, thanks, bye." "Another waiter was supposed to come in this morning, but he had a last-minute emergency and switched to the afternoon shift." Chris sipped her latte. "Everything is all right, I hope." "Yeah, he's fine." A group of drunk blondes demanding more mimosas snagged Blue Hair's attention. He flashed Chris a rueful grin. "Let me know if you need anything else." After a few minutes of scrolling through more headshots without actually seeing them, Chris slammed her laptop shut and caught the eye of an older woman sitting at the next table over. The woman was beautiful, with high cheekbones and tan skin. She was also a regular at Alchemy. Chris couldn't shake the feeling that she'd seen this woman before they both stumbled into the same coffee shop in L.A. Maybe she was a small-time actress? The woman smiled. Chris didn't return the overture. Just because they were familiar with each other's faces didn't mean they were friends or acquaintances. For all Chris knew, the woman was a stalker. Chris slid her laptop into her bag, tossed a 20 on the table, and glided out of the cafe. She was done with work today. Her next appointment wasn't until 6, which left her plenty of time to... do what? Shop? She did that yesterday. Go to the spa? Also did that yesterday. Go to the beach? Too hot and crowded. Chris preferred private stretches of sand owned by 5-star hotels in the Mediterranean. "Ugh. I'm a goddamn cliche," she muttered, climbing into her Mercedes. "Poor little rich girl with nothing to do." Boo fucking who. Chris wished her friend Farah, whom she met in Shanghai during a study abroad, was here so they could hang out. Farah lived in L.A., but she was interning in New York this summer, along with their other study abroad friends, Olivia Tang and Sammy Yu. Chris knew a handful of other people in the city, mostly celebrity offspring who frequented the same jet-set resorts as the Carreras. But she didn't feel like hitting any of them up. Teague was the only one she could stand, and he always spent his summers surfing it up in Hawaii or the South Pacific. After a moment of deliberation, she drove east toward La Brea. Less than half an hour later, she arrived at a 2-story office building that housed a dentist's office, Chase Bank, and Allstate Insurance Branch, among other businesses. It was so bland and suburban, it depressed the hell out of her. Chris killed the engine and got out of the car. It was only when she tried to open the locked building door that she realized it was Sunday, which meant no one was working. She groaned. I'm an idiot. Don't be so harsh on yourself. Chris spun around, ready to pepper spray the shit out of whoever was behind her. But relaxed when she saw Susan's twinkling eyes and warm smile. What are you doing here? Chris demanded. It's Sunday. Susan arched an eyebrow. She wore a pair of old jeans and a yellow t-shirt that had seen better days, and she carried a large cardboard box of what looked like craft supplies. I could ask you the same thing. If Chris were the blushing type, she'd be beet red. I mixed the days up. I thought it was Monday. I see. Susan was too nice to call her out, but her knowing glance showed she saw through Chris's blatant lie. For one, Chris usually showed up in the early evenings since she had to work during the day, but it was barely past lunchtime. While you're here, would you be a dear and open the door for me? She pointed her chin toward the key card dangling from her fingertips. Chris took the card, waved it in front of the building's electronic pad, and held the door once it buzzed open. She followed Susan to Mentor's office in the back, feeling somewhat like a daughter tagging along with her mother to work. Not that Chris would know what that felt like. Her mother had abandoned her and her dad when Chris was two. Perhaps that was why Chris had been drawn to the Mentor flyer she saw at Alchemy 2 weeks ago. Mentor was a nonprofit for girls who'd lost their moms, and it offered events, mentorship, and virtual programming for girls up to the age of 22. At 21, Chris was too young to be a mentor. Not that she would have signed up for the role even if she met the age requirements. She preferred her charitable contributions in the form of checks, thank you very much. She also had zero desire to be mentored herself. Chris had done just fine growing up without a mom. She'd figured out the whole period thing, never had her heart broken, and possessed kick-ass makeup and styling skills. However, some weird part of her had compelled her to take one of the flyers and show up at Mentor the day after, offering her volunteer services. Help with events, office work, that sort of thing. It made no fucking sense. Chris hated office work. She had to deal with enough of that bull in her day job. Contrary to what she'd thought, working for Bobby Raiden was less red carpet parties and more tracking media mentions of Bobby's high-profile clients. That was a total snooze fest. Susan flipped on the lights, illuminating the empty front desk and threadbare navy carpet. They bypassed the reception area and beelined to the back, where motivational posters and pictures of mentors and mentees at various outings papered the orange walls. So, Susan set the cardboard box on a table and surveyed Chris with intelligent eyes. Do you want to help me sort the supplies for next week's group activity, or do you want to share why you're really here on a Sunday afternoon? Chris scowled. She liked Susan, who'd quit her job in movie production and taken up her new calling as the founder of Mentor 4 years ago. But she didn't like her that much. Plus, Chris wasn't sure why exactly she was here on a Sunday when she could be flirting with cute guys at Chateau Marmont. Sort supplies. Chris pushed a thick lock of hair out of her eyes. She'd dyed her naturally black locks an overall dark brown and layered them with multidimensional chocolate and caramel balayage highlights. Thank God she'd found a stylist in L.A. who could do her Seattle hairdresser's work justice. Susan's lips curved into a wry smile. All right, then. They worked in silence for the next few hours. It didn't take long to sort the supplies, but Susan also needed help planning Mentor's annual summer gala in August. Chris gladly pitched in. She enjoyed event planning, and had helped her father organize dozens of charity events in the past. Mentor's budget wasn't exactly on the same level as the charity balls that charged $5,000 per plate, but a little creativity went a long way. Why are you doing this on a weekend? Chris scribbled a list of theme ideas for the gala on a yellow legal pad. Disney, Secret Garden, nautical. Nothing exciting, but they accommodated the mentee's wide age range. I thought event planning was Melinda's job. I don't mind. When you love something, it doesn't feel like work. Susan's eyes crinkled into a smile. I appreciate you staying, though, when you could be off breaking some poor boy's heart instead. Chris brushed off the other woman's teasing. Please, boys are more trouble than they're worth. Nate's image flashed through her mind again, like an annoying gnat that wouldn't go away. And she brushed it aside with no small amount of irritation. Most aren't, Susan agreed. But wait till you find the one you're willing to go through hell and back for. I don't like waiting. Chris was over this topic. Are the movies still happening tonight? Yes, thanks for the reminder. Susan checked her watch. We should leave now if we want to make it in time. You know LA traffic. If there was one thing in life Chris hated more than designer knockoffs, it was Los Angeles traffic. She should have hired a private helicopter for the summer instead of taking the Mercedes. She would have gotten hours of her life back. They made it to the movie theater 10 minutes past the agreed-upon meeting time. Luckily, Melinda, Mentor's program director, had been there to receive the girls and their mentors. Her face broke out into a relieved smile when she saw Susan and Chris. It probably wasn't easy, wrangling 2 dozen people on your own. While Susan and Melinda conferred over business, Chris took in the mentor-mentee pairings with cool detachment. Most of the girls didn't annoy her, which was saying a lot, but a few could use a makeover. Hadn't these people ever heard of deep conditioner? Chris! A bubbly blonde in jean shorts and a white t-shirt with a pastel rainbow splashed across the front bounded over. I'm so happy you're here! Chris's face softened a smidge. Wouldn't have missed it for the world. Skylar, who joined Mentor around the same time Chris started volunteering, was the one mentee she'd taken a liking to. Chris's predisposition toward the girl baffled her, considering her tolerance for perkiness hovered near 0 on a 1 to 10 scale. Until now, Courtney was the only person whose bubbliness didn't make Chris want to gouge her eyes out. Your brother still doesn't know you're coming to these meetings? Chris followed the rest of the group inside. Susan had bought their tickets online, so they bypassed the long lines and headed straight for the bored-looking attendants to the left. No, he thinks I'm here with a friend from soccer camp. Pink bloomed across Skylar's cheeks. It's stupid. He probably wouldn't mind, but I don't want to hurt him, you know? He's done so much for me since our mom died, and I never want him to feel like he's not good enough. But there are some things that you need to talk to a female about, Chris finished. Skylar flashed a grateful smile. Yeah. For a 17-year-old who'd grown up in L.A., the land of backstabbing vipers and fake smiles, she was startlingly innocent and well-adjusted. Not naive, per se, but she possessed a fresh, optimistic outlook on life that Chris couldn't fathom. Maybe that was why she liked the girl so much. Skylar was an oddity, a rare gem amongst a sea of hard-hewn pebbles. Plus, Chris sometimes glimpsed deep, abiding loneliness behind Skylar's sunny smile. And that she could relate to. The feeling of being all alone in the world, even when you were surrounded by people, could be a real bitch. I'd feel less bad if he had a girlfriend, Skylar said as they settled into their seats. Someone to take his mind off family and work. He's wound so tight, I'm afraid he'll have a cardiac arrest before he hits 30. She cocked her head and narrowed her eyes at Chris. You guys are around the same age. Don't even think about it. Chris's tone brooked no opposition. I don't do romance, and I'm only here for the summer. Skylar's brother sounded like a stand-up guy. He also sounded boring as shit. Family and work. Chris was halfway to Snoozeville already. But summer romances are fun, Skylar insisted. Chris arched a perfectly shaped eyebrow. Have you ever had one? No, but... Shh, the movie's starting. Sure enough, the lights dimmed, and the rest of the theater settled into quiet anticipation. Since some mentees were as young as 11, Susan had chosen a sweet PG-rated movie. By the time they reached the 45-minute mark, Chris wanted to shoot the screenwriter, the voice actors, the director, and whoever invented the concept of animation. There were only so many rainbows and unicorns she could take. It didn't help that Skylar snuck glances at her throughout the entire thing, with a mischievous gleam in her eyes that Chris didn't like. At all. After 90 minutes, the movie blessedly ended. Susan and Melinda stayed with the girls who were waiting for their family members to pick them up. But Chris had had enough group fun for the night. She said her goodbyes to the mentor staff and Skylar, ignoring the girls' last-ditch attempts to talk her brother up to Chris, and drove home. She was halfway to Beverly Hills when her phone rang. It was connected to the car, so she could see the caller's name flashing on the radio screen. Nate. Chris's heart did a silly little skip, and her fingers tightened on the steering wheel. "You're cutting it close," she said, dispensing with the usual greetings.
"Last I checked, I still had 21 hours left."
Nate's smoky drawl filled the car, so deep and velvety Chris could almost feel it. Her nipples puckered beneath her $300 silk bra, and heat oozed between her thighs until she bit back a surprised gasp. Chris didn't succumb to irrational lust. Ever. Yes, she'd been aroused after her encounter with Nate in the parking lot yesterday. But this was on another level. She was soaking wet after one sentence from a guy she wasn't even sure she liked. What the hell was wrong with her? "You and I need to talk later about appropriate responses," she told her traitor body, which only heated further in response. "Did you call to debate the timing or have you made a decision?" Chris congratulated herself on her aloof tone. No one could tell from her voice that she was trembling like a leaf in the wind. Nate chuckled, and damn it, the rough rumble of amusement turned her on even more. He could make a killing as a phone sex operator.
"Yes, I'll do it."
A brief pause.
"With conditions."
Conditions? Conditions? Anger tempered Chris's arousal. She'd already caved on his $5,000 upsell. $15,000 was a hell of a lot of money for what he had to do, which was basically nothing except look pretty and toss a few compliments Gloria's way. "You must be smoking crack if you think..."
"I'll do it for $15,000.
They spoke at the same time, but Nate wasn't finished, and his next words stunned Chris so much she couldn't find her voice for a long time after he spoke.
"And a kiss. From you. Anytime I choose."
Chapter 4. She was pissed. Nate's mouth tipped into a grin when he saw Chris standing in Hilltop Park, her eyes sparking with fury as she watched him approach. With her white dress, dark hair streaming in the wind, and deep scowl, she resembled an avenging angel on the verge of smiting the poor mortal who'd dared cross her. Except Nate was no mere mortal. She needed him. If she didn't, she wouldn't have called for an in-person meeting a week after she'd listed a few creative places where he could shove his counteroffer and hung up on him. Nate had taken a huge risk with the counteroffer. But if there was one thing he'd learned about life and business, it was this. Always negotiate. The opening offer was rarely the best one, which was why he'd tested the waters and upped the price to $15,000. An extra $5,000 may not mean a lot to Chris, but it meant a shit ton to the Reynoldses. As for the kiss part of the deal, well, it had surprised Nate as much as it did Chris when the words fell out of his mouth. But the more he thought about it, the more he wouldn't mind confirming whether her full lips tasted as sweet as they looked. He hadn't been able to stop thinking about her since they met, and it was driving him insane. Nate wasn't the type of guy who worked himself into a tizzy over a girl. Normally, he barely had to lift a finger before members of the opposite sex threw themselves at him, promising everything from BJs to threesomes to the kinky shit you only found on porn sites. Then again, nothing about this situation was normal.
"You're late,"
Chris said flatly. Nate hitched his shoulder up in a shrug. "Sorry, my audition ran over. and Long Beach is a long way from Hollywood, especially during rush hour. The audition had been for a minor role in an upcoming crime thriller, and he was sure he'd nailed it. The role comprised only a few lines, but it involved direct interaction with Oscar Bravo, the biggest action star in the world. Nate thrilled at the thought. Oscar was one of his idols. Chris huffed.
First your ridiculous counteroffer, now tardiness. You're pushing your luck.
If it's so ridiculous, why are we here? Nate leaned against one of the stone columns bracketing the low concrete wall. True to its name, Hilltop Park sat perched on a hill overlooking Long Beach, Rancho Palos Verdes, and downtown L.A. in the distance. It wasn't huge, just a round space dotted with benches and surrounded by a rolling carpet of lush grass. The only other people there were a high school couple too busy making out on a bench to pay attention to Chris and Nate.
None of the other actors I hired could get the job done, Chris grumbled.
Nate's eyebrows shot up. It's been a week. How many did you hire?
Three. And no, I didn't pay them all $10,000. Just $100 each to flirt with Gloria and see if they could catch her interest.
A frown creased her smooth brow.
No dice.
Thank God. Nate had been consumed with dread and guilt all week, thinking he'd thrown away $10,000 or $15,000 by being too bold in his negotiations. But now his usual confidence made a comeback. You think I'll be different? Nate knew he would. He just wanted to hear her say it. He wasn't the boasting type, but he also wasn't going to fake humility over his looks. He was aware of his effect on women, including Chris. The heat in her eyes wasn't entirely due to anger. Nate hadn't had sex in a public space since he banged Sherry Cummings at the beach when he was 16 and learned the hard way that beach sex was not, in fact, that sexy. It had taken him days to get all the sand out of areas he didn't even know he had. But there was no sand around now, and Chris was so small he could lift her with one arm and use his other hand to.
You better be. Given your terms.
Chris's cold words snapped Nate out of his X-rated fantasy. Instead of dampening his arousal, they only turned him on more. He loved a good challenge, and he couldn't remember the last time he'd had to do more than smile to get a girl into his bed, or car, or bathroom, or whichever surface was nearby. Nate didn't drink, didn't gamble, didn't do drugs. Sex was the one thing he indulged in regularly, though it had been a good 2 weeks since he'd seen action from anything besides his right hand. He'd been too busy.
Plan, which is going to guarantee her interest in you, Chris finished.
Shit. He'd missed the first part of what she said. What makes you so sure it'll work? Nate asked, hoping to draw more details out of her. He didn't want to let on that he hadn't been paying attention, not when their deal wasn't set in stone yet.
It'll work. Gloria's a vindictive, envious bitch who wants everything I have.
Chris pulled a manila envelope out of her giant purse and shoved it at Nate.
I'll discuss the plan in more detail after you sign the contract and NDA.
His disbelieving laugh filled the air.
You're joking. I don't joke.
You're seriously making me sign an NDA?
I have a 50% deposit waiting for you, in cash, after you sign.
5 minutes later, Nate handed over the signed contract and NDA in exchange for $7,500 worth of green. He split up the $100 bills, tucking some in his wallet, the inside of his jacket, and even his socks. Instead of weighing him down, the money buoyed him up. How many shifts would he have had to take at the cafe to earn that kind of money? Too many. And now he'd gotten it without having to do anything except scribble his signature on a few documents. He'd looked the contract and NDA over. They were straightforward enough. It wasn't like Nate was planning to tell anyone about his and Chris's agreement anyway. After a night of agonizing over whether to accept her offer, he concluded that he would be an idiot to pass up the opportunity. Black and white morals were a luxury when you had a family to feed and a roof to keep over their heads. Besides, Nate could get Chris her incriminating pictures without having sex with her father's fiancé. The right angle, captured at the right moment, could work magic on a person's imagination. As for breaking up someone else's relationship, Nate felt a stab of guilt. He was no home wrecker, but if he had to choose between his family and someone else's, he'd choose his every time.
Paranoid, aren't you?
Chris watched him stuff the last of the cash in his left sock. You can never be too careful. He smiled a slow smile. I'm missing one part of my payment, though.
I told you, I'll pay you the rest. Oh.
Chris had agreed to Nate's one-kiss stipulation, not verbally, but in the contract. It had been one line, buried in the middle of legal mumbo-jumbo, but it had been there.
Fine. Get your kiss.
Chris lifted her chin. Nate stepped closer until they were mere centimeters apart. She smelled like warm amber and lush florals, rich, sensual, and so damn sexy he wanted to bury his face in her hair and fill his entire being with her scent. He grazed his knuckle over her cheek and along her jaw. Her skin was softer than velvet, and he'd bet his last dollar that having all that softness wrapped around him while he pounded into her would feel like heaven. Chris had concealed the earlier heat in her eyes with a concrete wall. Those big, dark irises betrayed no emotion. But there was no mistaking the faint pink tint on her skin, or the quick, shallow rise and fall of her chest. She wanted him to kiss her. Nate curled his hand around the back of her neck and leaned in until their lips almost touched, and Chris's eyes fluttered closed. He wanted to devour her, to throw her on the ground, shove her dress up, and take her right then and there, witnesses be damned. Who knows? Maybe the teeny boppers over there would learn something. Instead, he moved his mouth to her ear and nipped her lobe. Quick, gentle, a promise of future pleasures to come. Not yet, he whispered. I'll kiss you when you're begging for it. A wicked grin slid across his face when Chris's eyes flew open and she shoved him away. Anger and a hint of frustration touched her features before she shut it down.
That'll be never.
She tossed her thick, dark hair over her shoulder.
Not that I care. You're the one who insisted on a kiss. If you don't want to claim it, that's your problem.
Oh, I'm going to claim it. Nate slouched against the stone column, confidence oozing from every pore. And when I do, you're going to remember it for the rest of your life.
Chapter 5. Chris was out of her mind, delirious from too much sun, boredom, and frustration after a month of living and working in LA. That was the only reason she could come up with for not only allowing Nate to live after the stunt he'd pulled in the park, but also agreeing to dinner with him. We can nail down the details of the plan without starving, he'd said. Bullshit. After his arrogant proclamations, I'll kiss you when you're begging for it. And when I do, you're going to remember it for the rest of your life. Chris was sure he was trying to seduce her. If so, he'd chosen the wrong target. She was immune to seduction, and she'd hired him to ensnare the step monster, not anyone else. She killed the engine and exited her car, at the same time Nate eased out of his with panther-like grace. Chris leveled him with a glare, which he ignored. This place better be good, she warned. Her stomach cramped, reminding her she hadn't eaten.